said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome to Back to Flower State of Fear. You got Brian, you got me. How is everyone doing tonight? You okay, Brian? Oh, no!
Hi, Joe!
Oh, no!
I came for a visit. Today is a special day.
It's a lot cleaner.
I thought maybe I could join you for the whole show. I'm going to be here the whole time.
You could absolutely join us, Billy. I think I knew
it was
you
Christmas
owned...
present for my son. He absolutely had to have it one year when he was little, and it was creepy.
Well, your son's a little horror kid. I mean, like, that did he even
he was a Goosebumps kid, so I think it stemmed from that. But he did legitimately do a ventriloquism act for his school talent show when he was like in second or third grade.
Oh, that's
so
great.
He did make it. He legitimately made it work.
Did he was able to throw his voice?
I mean, as much as a child ever could, you know.
That's still great, though. I mean, yeah. Of all the dummies, it's not that creepy of a dummy.
No, it's a cuter dummy. Yeah. It's not too bad. It's Danny O'Day. He's a famous dummy, like Howdy Doody.
Gotcha.
He's like a replica of a famous, a famous dummy. I don't remember the guy who was the ventriloquist. But I will say this movie, and we can talk about just this, you know, we're going to get into Dead Silence. But I did want to say that the opening credit sequence, and then generally, like, I think the next Batman villain, the Matt Reeves Batman 2, should be the ventriloquist in Scarface.
You know what I'm talking about?
Where he's got the little puppet gangster, but, like, clearly the ventriloquist is the guy who masterminds everything. Yeah, he's in the animated series. But, like, I actually think it's a cool, like, weird character that you could make work. Like, he's got a gun. He's still a guy with a gun. He's just as dangerous as any other psycho in the fucking Batman universe.
And like, all those Batman movies, like, they've all been about illusions anyway of, like, grandeur. So it's not...
Right. And you can't do... Like, Matt Reeves has already made way too realistic of a universe for you to do something like Mr. Freeze or Clayface.
We said he's doing Clayface.
I know. I heard two things. I heard he was doing Clayface, but I also heard that somebody wanted to make a standalone Clayface movie.
Just give us fucking movies. at that point. But yeah, Victor...
All right, Danny, thanks for joining us, bud.
He'll show up later. We were gonna, you know, talk about how we're doing and what we're watching. You do mention the intro credits of Dead Silence, and actually I love any sort of creation.
I don't know, again, we're kind of like building jumping ahead, we're almost ready to start talking about the movie already, but like, I think when we do get into it, we're gonna notice there's a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street built into this
so
movie.
Much.
And I think it starts out with the creation.
Yeah,
I think that's
the
very
the
nightmare.
Glove.
You know what I mean? That's like the right off the bat, they're kind of giving you the vibe of what you're in for.
You know what? There is, so I'll pause it there because it's nightmare. It's female Nightmare on Elm Street, basically. We always like to jump off when we start these episodes, though, without kind of, you know, just us. What have anything you've been watching? I know you've been ripping through a decent amount of horror.
You know, we were off mic, like, oh, yeah, we'll talk about what we watched. And I was like, I don't even know if I've watched much horror. And then my last five now watchings, all horror stuff. Me and Harrison on Easter, we watched Night of the Lepus, which is like Proto-Jaws with rabbits. With rabbits,
fuck
giant rabbits, and basically the way they make giant rabbits in this movie is they have real rabbits in miniatures, so everything's kind of like adorable when it's supposed to be scary. It was good, a lot of fun. That's a fun one. I watched Knock at the Cabin on Peacock.
Oh,
it's
yes, we
streaming
were supposed
now.
To watch that the same night together, and I did not watch it. It's good.
It's okay. It was all right. It was fine. It was a fine M. Night movie. I think it was a little bit better than Old, in my personal opinion. But Dave, another knock it out of the park, like, showcase for Batista. Worth it to watch just for to Batista. Give him. He gets a leading role, and he's great. He kills it.
I absolutely hated Old, which that movie had no redeeming qualities, in my opinion.
I mean, there was some fun stuff during the, as far as I was concerned, during the, like, getting old on the beach part, but, like, everything else about it.
I can always feel, I mean, like, I know this is the Shit on Old podcast, but, like, it was filmed in such a way where it's like you think they thought they were doing something different, but really it was just being annoying.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm not an M. Night hater, so I will watch Knock. Yeah, I've been personally slacking in my horror realm. Not even any, like, little TV shows here or there. So now
I have one more. I did a rewatch of a movie from 2008 called Splinter, and it's kind of a low budge horror, body horror, like infection movie. It's got the guy's name escapes me. He's got one of those, like, kind of memorable names, but until you hear it, you can't remember it. But he was in Kong Skull Island. He's the guy who gets smacked into the mountain in Kong Skull Island.
And I know
he was in, like, Agent Carter and stuff. But anyway, he's in it. Wigham.
Not the guy from Road Trip, right?
The guy from Road Trip is also in it, because I literally just watched Road Trip for the first time in, like, 20 years this week also, and then watched Splinter and was like, oh my god, this guy, I like hit the stride of this guy's whole career. Like, this
guy's in everything.
The Splinter's really good, and it was on, like, let me see, I streamed it. It was streaming a bunch of places, actually. I ended up watching it on Hulu, but it was for free a bunch of different places. It's from 2008. It's a blast. So it's one that was so good. I hadn't watched it, like, since around the time it came out, probably. And I rewatched it, and I put the Blu-ray on my Amazon list. I was like, I would like to own this, please.
Good. I'm glad. I always like when we get to own something. No, you know what? That's not true. I said I haven't watched anything. I watched my Blu-ray of The Dentist, like, a week ago.
Oh, nice.
Is
that the two-pack? Like, it came with both of them, right?
Yeah, it's nice. The Vestron. And I was just looking for some dirty horror, because that's what that is. And that's exactly, it's just unnerving, dirty, open-mouth horror. Nasty. Starring.
Yeah. Yeah, just grim.
The dad from Psych. But yeah, I only watched the first one of that, and then I don't know. I had a long conversation with someone the other week about the Candymans, and it was the same conversation me and you always have of, like, oh, the second one's better than you'd like. That one's growing on me. Like, it's just a slasher. Third one's basically a Skinamax movie without actually any, like, nudity or porno, but it has that feel to it.
That kind of sheen of, like, a made-for-TV movie, like, yeah. But it also, like, very much feels like a throwback to the horror sequels. It's funny you don't think about, like, the Candymans came much later than the Freddies and the Jasons, but it feels like a throwback to the sequels of those, to, like, the later Freddies.
Kinda.
Like, oh, you just kind of slapped one together here, huh?
Tony Todd showed up. It was a TV movie, or made for video. So I did have a good conversation with someone about those, but that's not to watch. But today we are talking about Dead Silence, 2007's Dead Silence. This is James Wan and Lee Winnell's quasi-final follow-up to Saw. I only say quasi-final because it was all kind of made around the same time.
Yeah, I was trying to get the timeline down, and I didn't do my IMDb research like I should have. But, like, they obviously do Saw together. At first, I thought this came out between Saw and Saw 2, but it comes out after Saw 2.
Comes out after
Saw 2. But before Saw 3, right?
I believe so, yeah, because it's 2007, and that's, like, 2003.
And Lee Whannell's he's a producer on, but he's only a writer on the first one, or?
Of the Saws? Of that, Saws. I'm not 100%. I believe you're right. I don't think he ever wrote Saw 2. It's, like,
characters. I think he just, like, kind of stayed on as a producer, but I don't necessarily think. And James Wan directed the first three, right?
of Saw's that? Yeah. I don't know. I'll go to his wiki right now.
We're terrible.
We're not well prepared. No, we are prepared.
Wildly unprepared, I would say.
Saw, no, he directs the first Saw.
Okay.
And then writes the story for Saw 3. And looks, his name does not pop up for some reason on Saw 2. So James Wan's second directorial movie is Dead Silence. Or third.
Okay, so, but Lee Whannell does stay on to write the first three.
I believe, let's go to Lee's. Let's go to, yeah.
I'm looking at just the Saw IMDb. And that's why that first three movies feel like a real trilogy.
Yeah, he writes the first three, and him and Juan are just involved in those.
Right, Juan moved, they're directed by that Darren Lynn Boozman, the first couple, the two and three, and then it looks like, yeah, James Wan just produces.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what he was doing director-wise between Saw and this. Did he do anything else?
So that's what's interesting. So he does, I'm still on Lee Whannell. He does this movie in same 2007, James Wan has two movies come out. One of his is not a horror movie. It's called Death Sentence. And it's like,
that's the Kevin Bacon movie.
With Kevin Bacon.
That's the movie, the James Wan movie that came out in 2007 that I watched.
Yes.
Not this one.
I saw the other one, the Dead Silence. So he's two Death Sentence and Dead Silence both come out.
It's funny, they both have the same Metacritic score basically on IMDb, but I would consider Death Sentence to be considerably better than
that. I mean, it's like Taken or like Death Sentence. I mean, it's just a family revenge.
Death Sentence, I mean, not to get off on a tangent, but it's based on the actual sequel to Death Wish.
Oh.
And it's more like the original Death Wishes where revenge is not the answer. You know, that's how the first Death Wish goes. And then the sequels are all like boomer revenge porn shit about shooting minorities. But like the first one has the right message of like, violence begets violence, and that's not the answer, and revenge is the answer, and that's what Death Sentence is about. It's okay. Like so, Kevin Bacon's a guy who experiences a tragedy, and he tries to get revenge, and thinks it spirals out till his whole life is blowing up, you know?
Gotcha.
And yes. It's good. I mean, I guess I say it's good. I probably haven't seen it in about the same amount of time as I, you know, so... It's very James Wan, it's probably very 2007, but I remember it at least, like, carrying the message pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't revisited that one. I remember my friends saw it and were obsessed with it at that time. But so that's the timeline of James Wan, if you're thinking about, like, Saul's already a thing, a couple of years have passed, but he's just been involved in producing and other things, and they're hired by a studio basically to, hey, we need another, the way I always heard Dead Silence was, hey, we need another horror movie. And they were like, all right, we kind of got this idea. So they went and they made this movie, and it was had a lot of studio involvement, and a script doctor came to it. So like Lee Whannell publicly has shit on Dead Silence. And even when he used to run a blog in like 2011, wrote an open letter of like, fuck that. Basically, fuck this movie. They kind of credit now with like, these are the lessons I learned to not do when working with the studio. And like, and they kind of, both of them kind of like, credit this movie for helping them have better movies in the future. So,
I can see that. This is like, you have a director with a very successful first feature, mm-hmm. and then they move to a bigger second feature with more studio input. I don't want to say, but it sounds a little Kevin Smith-esque.
Yeah, no, it's a little, so that's like the...
And he realizes maybe that's not for him, and he needs to go with separate, you know.
I mean, and then James, that's more Lee Whannell who's outspoken. Like, I mean, James Wan went to go make, you know, Fast and the Furious.
Seven. And yeah, he did all the Insidious movies, right?
Insidious, but... Yeah, Conjuring and recently Malignant. And Malignant feels more like a back to form of a Dead Silence.
Malignant feels like, that's what I was going to say, this feels like the precursor to Malignant more than anything.
Kind of weird, a little step cousin-y. But so so that's where this movie like stands, and like, and it's truly like one of these forgotten mid-2000 schlock horror films. Like, I was reading some articles today where
I wanted to get your perspective on this a little bit, because it's different for you, because this was like the era you were growing up in horror. Yeah, and I consider, not just for horror, but for movies in general, this era of like post, like from 2003 to like 2010, to be a pretty dark era for movies. Just not great. Just like kind of a little bit grim.
For me, they're all like, the memory of that is like, they are few and far between. I don't even think you have nostalgia goggles for them. Like, I like some of them, and you're a lot into the torture porn, so it's kind of what all you were offered. And what I was kind of reading about this today too is like, a lot of people speculate, oh, this movie might have been more of a hit and better 3 years later. Like, it's more of a ghost tale. It's more of this, and people didn't give a shit about these ghost tales or like,
yeah, that's horror true. Movies of this ilk. The thing that was going on, but in for me, at the time. Although when the Ring come out, what's the Ring?
The Ring, but that's like J horror, which I feel like was treated differently. Yeah. The Ring comes out in 2001, 2002.
Oh, okay, that's true. So this is 2007. So it's been a minute, which is good, because they rip off the opening scare with the girl's reveal under the sheet. I was like, this is just the Ring. She's been making the same face.
All those faces. But for me personally, this era of horror, like that was one of the better effects of this tongue out. Yeah. But for me personally, yeah, this era of kind of growing up and like middle school, it was, though, you remember every single horror movie coming out, the trailer is always good, and most of the times they were all duds. Like, I feel like, even though it's not the same, it's like this, Stay Alive, the video game one about Elizabeth Shaw, I think her name is, not Mary Shaw, Stay Alive. Michael Keaton's White Noise comes to mind, you know, the Mothman Prophecies.
Is this the same year as Paranormal Activity? Is 2007 the first
year? No.
Paranormal Activity is later, right?
2009, 2010,
okay.
And that's release year, right? We're not like, because I know that Paranormal Activity was floating around, but Paranormal Activity, yeah, Paranormal Activity is like, actually, you're right.
2007? For some reason, I thought so. So, like, we're actually looking at a shift again to another, but right, not into this. This is still outside of what people wanted. Like, yeah, we're actually at a crossroad. We're probably just kind of coming out of torture porn era and into like the ghost stuff. But like, it just didn't hit right. This needed to come out. Insidious. I'll tell you when this movie should have come out was when like 13 Ghosts and House on Haunted Hill and The Haunting. This should have been before Saw.
And we'll get to the normal stuff, is it because of James Wan and everything, you could tell the studio was like, well, we got to edit it and score it and basically want it to feel like a Saw movie. And it doesn't lend itself to, no, like the end reveal when they show, you know, the big twist at the end. And it's just a Saw recap.
Yeah, the cuts are very Saw-like. Yeah, the editing is very... Now, I watched the Blu-ray. I bought the Blu-ray, and then of course Shout Factory announced they were doing a 4K, and I was like, I think I'm good with a $10 Blu-ray on this one.
I don't think I need to upgrade that.
But it is the unrated cut, so I don't know if that's closer to what James Wan and Lee Whannell wanted originally, or what stayed. In my experience, it's mostly just seconds of gore in most unrated cuts.
I think for this one, it's seconds of gore. I don't think this is like our vision. From what I could read and everything, the original, their script, not even cut, was like a lot more interesting in the sense of like Mary Shaw was actually a victim of like spousal abuse. And her puppets were like her out, and that is the reasoning why she actually does some hauntings, and that's what they originally wrote. And then it's just not what the studio people wanted. Yeah. So I read and I didn't see it. Apparently the alternate ending does show more of something like that, but we'll just say we both watched the Blu-ray versions, but I see no difference in the unrated. I'm sure it's a couple gore scenes, maybe a jump scare.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say about it. But as we normally do, I'm going to read the synopsis here. And I have not read it yet, as we always do. Let's see if it's accurate. After his wife meets a grisly end, Jamie Ashen returns to their creepy hometown of Ravensfair to unravel the mystery of her murder. Once there, he discovers a legend of Mary Shaw, a murdered ventriloquist whose eerie presence still looms over the town as he desperately digs for answers. Jamie encounters the curse that took his wife's life and threatens his own. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we start the movie like this couple, this pregnant couple, they receive a mysterious box and it has a ventriloquist dummy in it, also named Billy, which, you know, I guess Juan and Lino were like, all the dolls are named Billy because that's
well, there is a Billy doll later in the movie too when they reveal the big
he's there
he's like not in the case but he's kind of like on the ground
saw puppet,
yeah, everybody's favorite saw puppet,
looking
like Kermit the Frog coming riding on that tricycle with his weird little puppet legs,
especially in that first one. You go back and watch that first Saw, like the puppet is clearly not supposed to be any sort of iconography for them.
No.
It's just one of another creepy things.
Yeah.
Although James Wan's Twitter handle was Creepy Puppet, so like that's his his calling card. It's why Annabelle looks like Annabelle, even though the actual Raggedy Ann doll is scarier
than
the demonic looking one, in my opinion. But they have that puppet comes and I mean, it wastes no time, which is nice. Just straight up puppet in it with a sheet, murders the wife, like you said earlier, murders the wife and the baby, like you said very earlier.
Oh, yeah, she's supposed to be pregnant, right?
Yeah, she's very pregnant. I mean, in the eyes of the movie, she's very pregnant.
Which means she's a 90-pound woman with a tiny belly.
Oh, my God. It's so funny when they're just like twigs and it's like, it's not a beach ball.
Yeah, no, this is totally a normal, a real belly. Don't worry about that. I was wondering, did you, in anything in your reading about this movie, did it say that this takes place in an alternate universe where the world is blue? Everything is so
That's mid-2000s.
Everything is so blue in this movie. It's insane.
This could have been a J horror movie for how blue it was, because that's like that tone, right?
Blue. It's more blue than The Grudge is green. It's way more blue than that. It's more blue than The Matrix is green. Like
it's very blue.
Blue. The only thing that's not blue in the whole movie is the kid's car.
Well, everyone drives vintage cars.
Yeah, of course. Obviously,
one of the things that the kid though they say. Talks to his wife, though, as she does mention, it reminds me of this poem called for Mary Shaw, and she kind of starts reciting some of it, but it's an interesting to find out that, like, the boy's hometown is based on it and not hers, and that's
just... Like, they've never talked about this before, no. Even though, like, he clearly grew up amidst this horror, like, this thing has a grip on his whole town, like...
The town makes... No sense to me, but...
Well, first of all, it's a Silent Hill-ass town with, like, a bunch of fog and fake digital matte painting backgrounds that look like shit. It looks like a real matte painting. The matte painting at the end of Terminator looks better than that.
Well, also, the town, like, was bustling at one point, but you also, like, have to take a boat to get to their big theater house.
Yeah, they built their theater house out on an island. That seems like a bad idea. Although it does make for a great place to have a horror climax. A weird, rundown swamp theater is a great place to have your horror climax.
That was only
clearly built. Worked backwards from that idea.
And it was only built to showcase a ventriloquist woman and no one else. when she went.
Well, I mean, I get the impression they probably use it for other things too.
She's the big git.
It's just the Mary Shaw Theater.
So, fucking. So, it is. So we do get that. And there's a poem to go with it. Beware the stare of Mary Shaw. She has no children, only dolls. And if you see her in your dreams, be sure you never ever scream. And that is your Freddy's 1-2 is coming for you. Yep. Nursery rhyme.
How do you feel about the screaming thing as far as the sleeping? Like, it's kind of unfair. Like, you know, it's harder to control your screams. Those are pretty involuntary. I also think I forget about it. I watched this movie twice, and I definitely at both times totally forgot about the don't scream thing until, like, in the third act where it becomes a thing again, where, like, it actually, like, comes into play.
I think the rules are really loose and fast with it, and she's not a fair killer. Like, that's the point of it. But yeah, we forget about the screaming part and really all of it.
I guess I don't mind that it's weird and silly and that they have their own lore. I just feel like it's a thing where they don't seed it enough that by the time they meet it to mean something at the end, I forgot all about it. I was like, oh yeah.
The protagonist.
I was like, wow, I just figured she got them. I didn't realize that it was supposed to be she got them because they screamed. You know what I mean? There comes a point where, like, somebody
screamed. I just thought she got them, too.
I just thought she got them. Like, yeah, I didn't realize that she got them. She, like, tracked them like the thing from The Quiet Place.
Yeah. The protagonist of that, too, also, of speaking of getting them, is the biggest knock of this thing is he's so boring.
Oh, like, yeah. It should have just been Donnie Wahlberg. Like, Donnie Wahlberg is back as the scummy cop from Saw 2.
Donnie Wahlberg, why on earth is he just shaving all the time?
I know we haven't gotten to that point, but obviously it's a horror movie, so we all know he's going to die. I love that when he dies, the shaver drops. Like, it's like his little signature thing drops on the ground. It's so stupid.
So we could go right to Donnie Wahlberg. So the guy's name is Jamie, and Jamie's wife does die.
Yeah.
And
Donnie Wahlberg's the cop investigating it. Yeah. Obviously, everybody thinks Jamie did it because, you know.
He's like, don't go anywhere. Seems to go back. He
immediately leaves town.
The other part that was really humorous to me with the, like, that too is he goes back to his hometown to bury his dead wife who didn't grow up.
Isn't from there, didn't even know he was from there, didn't know that, like, you know, like, if she was from there, she would have remembered the rhyme better.
Yeah. And like, just because they have to be in that town. That's the only reason why.
The whole thing is about getting back to the really soundstage where they all live.
Because really the only other people we meet along the way, or I shouldn't say only, two of the more main people is the mortician. And the mortician's mentally unstable wife. Yeah. And the mortician.
Very sensitive portrayal of elder dementia in that one.
It came off across, at least they loved each other. And, you know, he goes to him, and the mortician's like, ha ha. When the cops are done with it, then we'll get the body. And it's like, okay. And then I was like, is this the burial going to happen? Because I was like, did you talk to the girl's family? And he's like, not really.
Yeah, like, she just, like, doesn't have a family. They just brushed that off.
Yeah, they're like, I assume that the parents were stunned. And they're like, but anyway, they have the burial in the creepiest cemetery of all time. And
like a Tim Burton cemetery.
Yeah, and the mortician's wife, Marianne, comes running up. Miriam?
Yeah, it didn't matter.
Comes running up and starts spouting off some crazy nonsense about Mary Shaw. You got to bury Billy the puppet. And he's like, huh? And then the camera pans and you see it's the tomb of Mary Shaw. And you're like, oh shit, she's real. She's in this world. And he's kind of also been starting, I think, at this point too, having like nightmares about Mary Shaw.
They have a great scene that's lifted directly from Seinfeld with, like, him in bed, afraid of the puppet running around and the red light and everything. I was like, wow, they really went all in on the Seinfeld references in this episode. All he needs to be is like, Mr. Marvel.
And we do at this time also meet his sickly father and his, like, he's clearly came from, like, a loaded family. Because it's this big mansion, and his father's new wife is, like, essentially, like, her art, his age, like, maybe 30. She is Allegra Cole. She's the pretty woman from Hitch, the successful pretty girl in Hitch. And I think a few other things, but I was like, I recognize you're Kevin James.
I think she was, wasn't she a Victoria's Secret model or something?
I'm sure she came.
Anyway, I got to shout out Bob Gunton, fucking the Shawshank. He's the warden in Shawshank. Yeah. He's the police chief in Demolition Man. I just love Bob Gunton so much. I love that, like, even first time watch, like, you don't gotta be a sleuth to be like, something's going on with Bob Gunton.
No, they're not playing it.
They're like, he had a stroke. I'm like, he is purple.
they didn't hide it very well. Especially watching it, knowing that ending twist, you're like, oh yeah, he's a puppet.
He's super puppet.
But
also I love, since we're jumping into the puppet, I have to talk about when they reveal it. We already talked about the Saw style reveal of her working what is essentially a wooden rod with like a couple of little like knobs on it. I'm like, that controls his whole facial muscles and his eyes. He makes expressions. Like,
yeah.
How you doing that by turning a wooden stick in his neck?
Because Mary Shaw is a veteran ventriloquist.
Let's save. There's so many reveals. We already spoiled one. Let's save the final one.
My question is, why the fuck was she going this far to get this guy, this kid, the son of the?
If the puppet can just murder the wife like that, why do we have to lure the son back to the house and do an elaborate cat and mouse thing where he almost, you know, he buries Billy?
Unlike Freddy Krueger. And that is the comparison
we're supposed to hear.
Is there really no perp? Like, there's no, like, she's feeding off her fear, you go stronger, like, there's no purpose behind this other than...
I mean, technically she's doing the Freddy Krueger thing, she's getting revenge, because...
She's getting revenge.
We get the supposed Mary Shaw backstory, and I love the story that he gives them originally, is that this whole curse is because they heckled her, like, a kid heckled her, and she went on a murderous rampage and started killing all the kids, and then became, like, this vengeful spirit.
And then disappeared.
Right, and then of course you find out that no, the town Freddy Krueger'd her. That's why. Now, granted, she clearly was doing murder. She was much like Freddy. Yeah, she was doing horrific murders, but she wasn't just a person who got heckled over the edge.
No,
she got murdered.
she got murdered, so she came back, and I love also how this. In this world of movie too, because the mortician is very aware of, you know, he's the one who gives us the whole that first backstory of, like,
this is a Final Destination movie. He's Tony Todd, the mortician,
and she was like, oh well, you know, my father, she died, and my father took care of her. Her final wish, because, you know, that's what morticians do. We put their final wishes in.
Yeah,
this is like, yeah, I made her a dummy as well, and it falls in front of him, and that's just creepy. Like, there's creepy scenes in this movie. Like, I think.
Oh,
this...
no, definitely. When we get into the final act, there's a couple visuals that I want to point out that I think are excellent.
Like I don't. The one comp I know this movie's fun to goof about too. Like, what we're doing, but is like, I think this is probably a perfect Halloween time, like, spooky season, fall time, like, throwaway watch is a a wrong term for it, but like a, hey, I'm looking for something that's not too offensive, but we could all sit down and have a nice, a good, like a good scare too.
Yeah, this is a movie that is not great, but it is not offensively bad. It is not like gonna ruin your evening with how bad it is.
No, I don't think it would ever, cause this, what I found trying to do readings, a lot of people,
like when I said 13 Ghosts and House on Haunted Hill, if you were having a night where you're watching that level of movies, this one, you could slot this bad boy right in.
A little step above the 13 Ghosts. And
13 Ghosts had a really good DVD special feature.
Oh, you've told me that.
It's better than the movie.
The bio, not bio, but yeah.
Told you about all the ghosts. Yeah. It was so cool. I was like, this should have been in the movie. You should have cut out that annoying little kid and put this in instead.
No, Shaloub had a Shaloub in that movie.
F. Murray Abraham is in that movie. Oscar winner F. Murray Abraham.
But just like that movie, this movie, very smallly, but they exist on the internet, a lot of like in defense of Dead Silence articles. Oh, sure. And
you can find a niche fan base for anything.
And a lot of them are more so this villain, this story and villain are much cooler than the movie presents itself. And I got to agree with that because I think one of my notes in this is, I think this movie would have worked so much better if we just scrap, let's scrap our like main characters and everything, but keep the, like the bones and the backstory. What if it was a tale about restoring the theater?
And, okay. Like, you know, do it like a Phantom of the Opera almost kind of thing.
But it's like, you know, but it's still the same horror and everything and the town's depressed, but it's like, hey, I want to revive this theater, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, out-of-towners come in so that you have an excuse to explain the whole backstory to somebody and stuff. Mm-hmm. New people buy the theater. They're going to gentrify the theater.
Yes, I think it works. Keeping almost, like I said, exactly the same, works same. Because there's some creepy shit in there. But anyway, so, but that is a lot of this movie, except we're going like really beat for beat through it as we normally would.
Well, you don't really need to because the set, we talked about the beginning, you know, she dies, he comes home to his hometown. You know, he's got a strained relationship with his dad. And the middle of the movie is just a lot of like going around and like finding out things. Facts and then like so talking to the mortician and then talking to someone else. At one point he tries to bury the doll like she tells him.
And it comes back and then like it's actually like you said, the Donnie Wahlberg is like he's the best part when he comes on screen. When he comes back, he's like, all right, and he takes the fucking doll with him. Because he's like, well, I'm going to take this. I hope you don't mind. Because like, don't do it. And it's like, it's such a wet blanket of a character. That's my point of that.
The lead in this is just a real nothing. It should have just been Donnie Wahlberg, sleazy, you know. And then you wouldn't have had to worry. You could have ended your movie with the main character dying. You wouldn't have had to have anybody live.
Well,
you
know what I mean? No one lived. That's the best thing of this movie is there's only one person who lives.
Yeah.
Everyone dies.
Oh, that's true. I guess she does get the main character in the end, too, doesn't she? I forgot about that. But yeah, see, you didn't need him at all. No, you could have just had that be Donnie Wahlberg.
It's a straight up, like, it's a vehicle just to watch these people die. And
yeah. Like, at the beginning, you have all three of them die. You have the husband, daughter, or the husband, wife, and unborn baby all killed. Donnie Wahlberg's a cop. He has to go, he's going to talk to the family and try to investigate what happened with this, why these people were murdered. So yeah, that leads him to the hometown to look
more
for
like a Wicker
whatever.
Man scenario.
Yeah, it like leads him into the, now he's in this weird town and he's like
the town, but once again, the boats we gotta take to the theater. But yeah, and I mean that ending, we get to the ending climax where Donnie
He investigates around a little bit, and then eventually he has to go to the theater, and everything happens at the theater. It's like, why didn't we just go here in the first place?
It is a lot of fluffer. Like, you just kind of found out everything I own. Like, it's just more facts, right? Okay, 101 doll she has that she was buried with. That only comes in back at the end because it's like, oh, they've all been dug up. And it's just something that a character tells you off screen.
And then it is cool when they reveal the wall of dolls.
Oh, it looks great.
that's great. And I like when all the dolls start turning their head, except it takes too long. Like, you didn't need to show all the dolls doing it.
They showed all the dolls.
Every single doll. Creak.
And they're all, and like, she kind of has this monologue with it where she's like, you know, I experimented with everything, revealing that, like, some of these puppets were used from the body, the remains of the people or children I've murdered along the way.
Yeah, you get the impression, well, especially with the, like, with the reveal of Bob Gunton and stuff at the end, she's clearly been working with, like, human tissue and stuff. And then you have the reveal of the, like, full-on corpse, boy corpse Pinocchio, which I was like, okay, that goes pretty hard. That's pretty great.
It rules.
Like, it all strung up creepily. It's, like, half decayed and rotted. That's pretty great. I like how that.
Jamie, the lead, is quippy with that, too, because he's not like, oh, fuck, we got to get out of here. This is the mayor's show. Like, I told you. He's like,
yeah,
I think we just solved a 70-year-old murder. And, like, Donnie Wahlberg's like, I didn't sign up for this. Like, that.
Donnie Wahlberg's the cop who's, like, actually seen shit in his life. He's like, nah, man, I'm cashing in.
And then he just starts just one-handing shotgunning the dummies. And they're like, she's going from dummy to dummy.
Right. You find one of Mary Shaw's powers, again, ill-defined abilities that Mary Shaw has. But apparently she can jump. That's why she brought up the 100 dolls. She can jump between the bodies of all the dolls.
It is funny. The one thing I read about that and, like, Lee Winnell was, like, the script doctor shit. Like, yeah, we hated it. But part of it, they were like, well, can you, like, give us reasons or, like, define why, you know, some of these things are happening? I guess they didn't wrote that because, you know, scary is just scary, and it probably would have worked more solid. It. But trying to answer some of those things according to it muddied up the movie more and more, because you're right, her powers. Okay, so she's living in da-da-da, but she's also, like, living somewhere else and...
Well, she's controlling all the puppets, but does that mean they also can work independently of themselves, or can she only do one at a time?
And
she seems to be jumping from body to body, but does that mean that she was controlling Billy when he was all the way in the city with them? Where was she at?
USPS system, like...
Yeah, yeah.
So...
But again, it's not a big deal, honestly. Like I said, I like...
It's a fun horror. It's a fun scare.
Yeah, it's a fun scare, and I like the jumping around him, shotgunning all the...
I personally think our movies have too many answers sometimes.
I actually had that complaint, or I was, like, starting to complain about that movie. I can't remember what movie it was I was watching, and I kind of started to be like, oh, I wish they would explain, and then immediately I was like, oh, no, actually, that would have sucked. I'm really glad they didn't do that, actually.
I don't think, like, especially your supernatural shit needs explanation. Okay. But... You know, there's the big thing, and then really the most effective part of the movie is the clown ventriloquist dummy that she's initially using, Mary Shaw's using to communicate to Jamie through it, and this is where we do find out, like, using the bodies for this, and it's like, come closer, and, you know, it's creepy.
Well, and then what I think is, again, along with the child corpse puppet, the other gnarly reveal of a cool idea, clearly a thing that they had as an idea, is that basically made a super long tongue out of all the tongues of the, like, corpses that she's, you know, the people she's killed, and she always takes the tongue, and then she's got this, like, huge, like, boa constrictor coming out of her mouth made up of all these little tongue all the time. I was like, oh, that's a pretty fucked up image. That's some real Lovecraft shit there.
And it's a choice too, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Well, because she's a ghost, so she doesn't have to have that.
But she's doing something with the tongues, which is fun.
It's part of her aesthetic. Well, she's really leaned into the ventriloquist ghost, and part of that is tongue and mouth control, and she's all about it.
And so then that all happens. And
to be fair, they do some ventriloquist stuff in here. They do some voice throwing, mimicry. They do work in a little ventriloquism.
Well, I think that's all that happens throughout, right? Like,
yeah.
The mortician, you know, she mimics his voice to get Jamie to come.
They do the wife at the beginning.
And, like, no, she kill. I took it as if she kills you, you're getting your voice, like you should use your voice to mimic, because
Terminator rules, you know what I mean? Once she gets you, she
calls up she calls up Jamie when he has his final confrontation with Donnie Wahlberg, and he's like, no, I gotta go to the theater because he has proof. And it's like a ratty phone call, and it's real deceptive. And as an audience, we know he's just been murdered. But then I think I just underdid my rule, because that Miriam, the ventriloquist, the guy's wife, the mortician's wife, doesn't die actually, but she uses her voice to get the mortician in the morgue, which I found really funny, because you think she would die, but really we learn that she's the only one that lived, and it's because she never actually probably had any interaction with Mary Shaw.
Sure.
It did also make me chuckle, speaking of the mortician, him using that old-timey camera, and in the flashback, his dad was using the same camera.
Yeah.
I liked one scene where, like, Jamie confronts him about all this ventriloquist shit and these murders, and he's like, why did you take these photos? And the guy's just like, it's part of my job. You're mutilating the corpses, man.
I didn't find that to be a very viable explanation either.
No, it was the one that made me chuckle, because the British was the most, like, to me, except for Donnie Wahlberg, trying to be, like, grounded person in the movie, who was like, we respect the rules of what's going on here. I wonder what the rest of the town thinks, who's like, I don't know, we just moved.
Well, the town does have a real Flint, Michigan style vibe to it. It's like, he's driving through, it looks pretty run down. So he has his big confrontation with Mary Shaw, and he shoots up all the puppets, and he thinks he blows up Billy, and he thinks they're all done, right? He thinks all the puppets are gone, and then he goes upstairs to find his dad. Is that where we're at, right?
I mean, Donnie Wahlberg gets thrown, like...
Donnie Wahlberg falls and he screams, dies. Where the scream thing comes back.
And,
because he falls, and as he falls, he screams, and then, like, she comes in as, like, a black ghost mist and, like, sweeps him out.
It's a really weird-looking death, because it's so, like, in air and then off-screen, and he falls.
Yeah.
And then after that, yeah, the Jamie, like destroys them all, kind of, and, like, gets away, and he goes back to his dad to have
He thinks that because there's no more dolls, that she won't be able to...
Yeah.
He's broken the spell with no dolls to go into.
But we go back to then to his father's mansion, and that's where we have the Saw-style reveal of you've been
Bob
the whole time.
Gunton has been a puppet this whole
even, like,
time.
Showing, like, the food's falling out of his back. And
yeah.
And
that effect is cool, though. I like the way it was done and everything. It was fun. I remember the first time I saw this and I saw that reveal. I was like, oh, hell no. Bob Gunton's a puppet.
It kind of works.
It's really silly, but it does work, I think. And I think it's kind of like when we talked about Killer Clowns on Flyover. I don't think I've watched your Fear episode, okay. So you might have covered it there too. But we talked about how, like, commitment to the bit matters. You know, if you're gonna go out of your way to make your movie about a ventriloquist killer, then you better have some ventriloquist shit in here. Mm-hmm.
and it's all ventriloquist shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they did a good job with that. And then, like I said, we find out the big reveal, because he's been looking through her, and he had the notebook, the Mary Shaw notebook,
mm-hmm.
and about making the perfect puppet. And we find out the stepmom, the wife, has been a puppet
Mary
this
Shaw.
Whole time. Yeah,
she's Mary Shaw.
She's the real Mary Shaw, like, in a perfect puppet body, like a mm-hmm. human-looking puppet body.
And that's been the vessel in that, but the motive still makes no sense. But then she kills Jamie, and it was all for nothing. And we never got a sequel.
Yeah, no sequel. Although I think Mary Shaw would have been a cool villain to keep going, but you got to have a stronger movie out of the gate if you want your villain to.
You know,
she was played by a lady who I only ever saw in one other thing. She's in Orange Is the New Black. She's part of, like, the scary old lady gang in Orange Is the New Black, and she's got a couple of really good scenes in that. But she's great as Mary Shaw. She was a very, very cool look. Very good look.
Judith Roberts, yeah. She, one of the Golden Girls. In Netflix's Orange is the New Black.
Right, right.
No, I'm reading it going, that's not right. Yeah.
But she's not one of those Golden Girls.
She looked great. It's funny, because we pulled up her IMDb, same year she was in that Death Sentence movie, and her name was Judge Shaw.
Mm.
But no, it's a really, like we said, fun, like, little horror movie that has...
It's a breezy 90 minutes, you know, like, you're not killing yourself watching this one.
Yeah, it has nothing, you know, it has as much going for it as it kind of needs, but yeah, we could have benefited from her having having more Mary Shaw. It's a creepy enough story.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, there's some things you could have done to improve it. Like, it, unfortunately, it's a product of its time, and it came out in an era that had some kind of, like,
it's not
horror stuff coming out in it. Like, it's,
I think it's
definitely not, it definitely kind of, like, accentuates all the worst aspects of all the, like, worst instincts that James Wan has, you know what I mean? Like,
it's a straight up, it feels like when you find out that they were kind of like, hey kid, we need another horror, your contract to make more horror movies for us, make one.
Yeah.
It feels like that when it's like, yeah, when James Wan is at his best, right? And this movie did terribly at the box office. I mean, it made its money back. I think it was 22.
People aren't really huge on puppet movies.
And but James Wan's instincts, right? First Saw, surprise hit, spanned, you know, still spending sequels. You know, Insidious, surprise haunted house story, ghost story, people loved it. Once again, the sequels was never really a hit for me, but still had its sequels. But, you know, James Wan's child, basically, I remember reading, it was like, because of what he didn't saw, he made sure when they did Insidious, that it, like, there's more care to it. And same thing with The Conjuring. And then he makes big action movies. So, like, it's interesting.
The third Conjuring movie's real bad,
though. Oh, that was rough. I think he actually didn't direct. That was the one he didn't direct.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that one was so bad. Not good. And you gotta be, like, really bad when I don't want to buy the Blu-ray even for cheap.
Yeah.
That's one of those movies. But... So I think Dead Silence, I don't want to call it a misstep because it's a fun movie. Like you said, I'll watch it this Halloween season.
Yeah, it's one. It's funny. It's one that I had never watched. My wife had watched it, and it was on. It was kind of sitting on my Amazon wish list for a long time. That's kind of why I ended up trying to, like, pulling the trigger on it for the show. It was, like, seemed perfect. It was kind of from an era that is more in your wheelhouse, but something I had never seen.
Yeah,
but from filmmakers we're both familiar with and stuff who are still working or still kind of big names. I mean, shit, Lee Whannell is bigger than ever. Like,
Lee Whannell is the, like, right, the real star, like, since Upgrade and then The Invisible Man. And he's supposed to be
working on the new Wolfman, right?
That I would love. That would be great. I did not know that, but he makes sense if he would do the Wolfman. I mean,
yeah.
After what he did with,
I thought Invisible Man was great. So, man. Like, I hope that it'd be cool to see him, like, you know, do something else with that. And if that's where he is, but Upgrade's excellent. And like, yeah, I said, it's cool to see him kind of get to come back. And, you know, he didn't have the meteoric rise like James Wan, where he was just like, he stayed steady and kept his nose to the grindstone. And, like, now he's doing good work again.
Mm-hmm. A lot of talent. To this with them, but yeah, other than that, right, I wish this just had a better cast involved with it.
Yeah, I think there's some stuff you could have done to tighten up the story. I think we talked about that, and I think, yeah, better casting or even just eliminating that character and going a little bit of a different route would have worked. But yeah, overall, like I said, this is one that I kind of scoffed at and kind of because me and Sarah watch a lot of horror movies together, which means we watch a lot of bad horror movies. And sometimes I give her a hard time, and I'm like, oh, sometimes, you know, she'll pick one. And
she was a fan.
This is one of those ones that she just watched without me because I was kind of like, eh. And then it just been on my – kind of like just outside my sphere for so long. I thought it was a good choice, and it turned out, yeah, it's totally fine. There's way worse movies out there. This is, like, inoffensive, schlocky, and just weird enough that I think it, like, it like, earns its place in that, like, niche cult,
well,
you know?
It's right there when, like, we were joking on Twitter the other week with, like, The Pope's Exorcist, yeah. Right? Where, like, this is that.
Yeah.
Like, or, like I don't know. I'll just come and call what they are. Trash studio horror movies. And I have a soft spot for almost all of them because I know what I'm getting. They're fun. They're jump scares. They're a little more than that. And you might get something interesting of a creepy moment. But that's it. Not
like this one definitely has a few creepy ideas in it, you know, and maybe not enough to carry it to being a classic, but enough to make it watchable for sure.
Not everything. I think I'm going to end this here. Needs to be of two camps, either your A24 horror movie or just like what we talked about, you know, what we talked about last week, Maximum Overdrive, like the schlock. Not everything needs to be those two camps where it's like, sometimes I just want a studio horror movie that's offensive in the sense of like, it's pretty fucking lazy, but it worked.
Right. But it was fun. Well, and again, and I've heard people talk about this before too. It's like, with horror, sometimes you just need something for teenagers to go see on the weekend.
That's what,
and this is 100% that.
This is like my wife.
It comes out now, just like every horror movie, every shitty horror movie that comes out a weekend that we all forget. But somebody, it's going to be their favorite, and it's going to be a movie they fucking love that gets them into horror, and they go on and see better stuff because of it, and they'll always hold a soft spot for it.
That's how I saw this. And that's cool too. I think that's how I saw this. I think it was like, oh no, that was pretty sweet. And then I discovered better things, and I've, you know, I mean, Absolutely. We were able to talk about it today, but anything else you want to add about Dead Silence, Brian? I think we covered it weirdly enough with this, because it is so simplistic, and like that middle meat of it, like there isn't any really scares to highlight, I'm realizing, in the middle of
You've seen a movie like this, he goes around, he looks at microfiche, he talks to locals, he sees some, you know what it's like.
Yeah, it's good. Anyway, thank you for joining us all, listening to us talk about Dead Silence. You'll see us next time, whenever that may be, and you want to lead us off there, dummy?
Yeah, Joe! Thanks for having me on your program, and I can't wait to come back and tell every one of your fans to go fuck themselves.
Stay frightful.
That's terrible. Danny.
Wow. Danny, why would you?
Ah! Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.